Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where family B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by David Nassif of Wealth Compass. David's story will hit home to a lot of owners and operators. After nearly two decades in a corporate role, he was unexpectedly let go in his 60s, forced to rethink everything about security, income, and what the next chapter would look like. What's followed wasn't just a rebuild. It was a shift in how he thinks about wealth, risk, and ownership. Insights he's since distilled into a practical framework, including his one-page wealth compass. Today, David works with business owners, particularly in B2B and insurance-related markets, helping them think more clearly about building wealth beyond the business itself. And what makes this story especially meaningful is that this next chapter is being built alongside his son, turning what could have been a setback into something much more lasting. David, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Ed, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here with you today.
Same here. So let's start with the moment, that moment. Sure. After 18 years, servicing a company, you were let go unexpectedly. What was going through your mind? If you take us back to that moment in those few days.
Well, as you mentioned, I was with them for 18 years. Good company, nothing wrong with the company. But anyways, one day, when I was 63 years old, I was called in and let go unexpectedly. I had no clue that it was happening. I tell you, I wouldn't wish that day on anybody. I did the math. And if we drained all of our savings and all of our retirement, we were scheduled to be broke by 65. And at this point, I'm thinking, who's going to hire me at my age? But that wasn't even the hard part, Ed. I mean, it was very hard, believe it. But the hardest part was driving home, thinking, how am I going to tell my wife, Mary? We'd been married for 30 years at that point, and she did not deserve the mess I just threw our life into. Mm. So anyways, I'm starting to look for another job. My heart wasn't in it. I did not want to go back to the corporate world, but I needed to keep a roof over her head and keep foot on the table. So I started interviewing and it just wasn't going anywhere. My heart wasn't in it. I know the people I was interviewing, it was like they were saying, they didn't say this, but it's like they were saying, oh no, the company that fired you, they were right. You're of no value anymore. So it's like, we don't want you either. So nothing. So one day I decided I need to take a huge risk because I have to hire myself because no one else is going to do it. So I decided to start my own company and I went to work as an independent sales agent on straight commission, no salary, no safety net, no benefits. The first months were brutal, cold calls, constant rejection, rookie mistakes. I heard so many no's, like I can't count in that 2 month period. But you know, and as I look back on it now, I can kind of reflect on it later. I realized that all that rejection I was getting, all that resistance I was getting was helping me build the mental muscles I needed to punch through that dark period of my life. 10 months later, I had an incredible milestone. I was suddenly making more money than my good paying six figure corporate salary. And for a moment I thought, we made it. But then I realized, we didn't make nothing because I had been making good money for 40 years and look where it got me. I had nothing. I was 2 years away from being broke. I said, I need to learn how to invest. I need to learn how to build wealth. Making money isn't enough. And so I dug down. I couldn't listen to a bunch of conflicting advice and people with their theories on investing. So I read 21 books, listened to 13 financial podcasts, read blogs, newsletters. Every time I got a good idea, I put on one piece of paper. I kept putting on one piece of paper. When the paper filled up, I said, I'm not going to be on one piece because I want to keep it simple. And so I would take the worst one off and put a better one on. I kept refining it, getting it to a set it and forget it approach because I had to run my business. I couldn't be watching Wall Street. After 6 years, I did what I thought was impossible. From terrified, and I mean terrified of being broke, to a seven-figure portfolio and real financial freedom. And I now know it is never too late to rewrite your story. Because if I can pull it off starting as late as 63, anybody can, I believe, with the right direction.
Wow. That's amazing. And it really, upends a lot of what we hold dear to in the name of security and control.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think there's a lot of family business owners out there that feel that security and control because they, you know, we own a business. I own a business, as do many who've been on this show. But, you know, let's talk about that. Let's unpack that a little bit. Based on your experience and what you've seen, how real is that security and control at the end of the day?
It's not. It's just imagined in our minds, I think, somehow. I think whether you're in the corporate world, whether you're in a family-run business, whether you're the second, third, or fourth generation, I mean, it's on you, and you got to take, you know, responsibility for yourself. And here's a lot of things that I don't know if we talked about this before, but I was actually in a family business years ago, many years ago. I was the second generation, and the thing that a lot of family businesses don't realize is some people get a false sense of security. It's family; they're not going to fire me. You know what could happen? All that kind of thing. And maybe they won't fire you, but you know, maybe you won't have that financial security you really need. That's where I wish when I was in my 20s and 30s, I knew about this one-page wealth compass, because if I'd have done that then, I would have created my own security and not been dependent on my own entrepreneurial business or my own, the corporation I work for, because no matter what's going on in your life, whether you are, you know, work, you know, your own family business, or you work for somebody else, you got to build wealth. I mean, the problem is so many people don't have a plan. And if you don't have a plan, you're part of somebody else's plan. And for years, I made other people wealthy and I made good money, but I wasn't making myself wealthy. And that's when it was a wake up moment for me. So I don't care what the situation is, whatever people are in, you got to build your own wealth.
And you got to build along the way your own really security and control by virtue of doing so.
Because I don't want anybody at 63 on the verge of financial collapse like I was, making good money all their life. That's the thing I want to emphasize. For most of my life, I was making really good money, way above average. So it's not about the size of your paycheck. It's about your ability to build wealth.
When you look at closely held B2B companies, namely in the family business space, where you know, in your kind of outside eye, are they often the most exposed without maybe realizing it?
Well, I do think a lot of the family members do have a false sense of security. Mm-hmm. A lot of the family members feel like, okay, and a lot of the family members, I'm going to tell you what I've seen anyways, a lot of them feel trapped. They feel trapped in that family business. I mean, I know that sounds weird maybe to some people, but they don't know how to get out. And that's how I felt in the corporate world. My last 8 years of my 18 years, I knew I should have quit, but I didn't have the guts. I mean, I was in my late 50s making really good money, and I just didn't have, I mean, who quits in the late 50s making good money when there's not a lot of options out there for people in their late 50s and early 60s? And so I stayed there, and I'm grateful that they pushed me out of the corporate nest, because that was a gift. I mean, I look back on that and I don't have any hard feelings towards the company. I'm like, I'm grateful. I should send them a gift basket and a thank you card, really, because they did me a gift. But people in family businesses, they feel trapped. I see it. I see it in their eyes. I see it in their tone of their voice. They feel trapped, but you know, it's like, okay. And they don't want to get out there. Well, I'm saying, okay, if you don't want to get out there, I sort of get that, but you got to be building yourself security. You got to be building yourself security, building yourself wealth. I recommend maybe getting out of there too, but depending on the situation, not everyone should stay, not everyone should get out. It's just kind of your situation. You got to decide for yourself.
Yeah. So a lot of times, and I've seen this, I'm sure you've seen this, where there's a business owner and it might be a multi-generation leader, and you know, maybe it's clear that they're the last in line, you know, that there's no next gen to take the baton, so to speak. Yeah. And they'll sometimes say, well, what's the future plan or the financial plan? Well, the business is the plan. You know, their adage is like, oh, you know, at some point I'm going to exit, I'm going to sell it. Why, David, is that such a risky position or a risky thought process in your mind?
Because I've seen it, not only in my own life, but in other people's lives. They felt like the business was their security, and things happen. Sometimes things can change literally overnight. We saw that with COVID. We saw that with 9/11. We saw that with unexpected things at the 2008 recession. I mean, out of the owner's control, out of the company's control, and suddenly your multi-million dollar, you know, exit parachute turned into you know, a fire sale, you know, and nothing but what you were thinking of. But if you have a separate wealth building machine going on during that whole period, then if you are exiting not at all like your dreams were, you're going to be just fine. You know, you're going to be totally fine. But you know, putting all the eggs in one basket, I don't care what the situation is just everybody has two money machines going on. One of them is your salary or your income or your commissions or whatever it is, and that's really good. And the other one is your ability to build a portfolio to build wealth for you so you can live off of your money. And if you're not doing both of them, you are in a high risk situation. I don't care how secure your family situation is or how secure your business situation is, because we've all seen it. I remember I had a bunch of friends who were in mortgage finance. They had their own companies. They were rolling in the dough, driving BMWs, Mercedes, Porsches, Jags. I mean, they were wearing their Rolexes, going on fancy vacations. And all of a sudden, in a matter of 30 days or 60 days, they were out looking for a job. And they didn't put anything away. They didn't build wealth. They were living just, you know, can I just give an example of, because a lot of your people might think, well, David, I work for a family business, but, you know, I'm struggling. I mean, I'm living paycheck to paycheck, honey, doing my family business. I'm not making that much money. And if I was making as much money as Ed's making or you're making, I could invest, but I'm not making that kind of money. Well, let me tell you why that's a lie. Okay. Here's the deal. The NBA, the National Basketball Association, the average player makes over $10 million per year. I didn't say in their career, I said in a single year. And yet, after 5 years of retirement, 60% of them are broke, according to the Netflix documentary Broke. And the NFL is even worse. After only 2 years of retirement, 78% of them are either bankrupt or in serious financial stress, according to Sports Illustrated. Now, compare that to Dale Schroeder, a basketball-loving carpenter who earned below average to average income his entire career, yet he chose to live on less than he earned and invest the difference. He ended up with a $3 million portfolio. That's more than most of the NBA and the NFL players with their tens of million dollars. And this little guy did. So I'm telling you, there is a big difference. I discovered this when I made my one-page wealth compass, when I created it. There's a big difference between making money and building wealth. Those athletes, they were amazing at making money. I mean, how many people do you know, Ed, that make over $10 million a year? That's not very many people out there, okay? Yet they were, most of them, not all of them, most of them were terrible at building wealth. Now, Dale Schroeder, he was pretty bad at making money. I mean, he really didn't make much money, but he was a master at building wealth. You have to get both skill sets and you have to work with both of them.
And it requires incredible discipline. You know, it really does, I think, because it's very easy, you know, as a business owner to fall back on, well, you know, at some point I'm going to have an exit, you know, but the and I'm actually seeing it now. I just had another guest on who was speaking about, he goes to DealMax, which is a conference that brings together, you know, private equity people that are involved in transactions. And he said, you know, boy, the appetite really shifted, you know, in terms of what people are looking for and willing to pay amongst, you know, and everybody thinks, you know, my golden parachute is private equity. They're going to come in and buy me up and buy a bunch of others up like me in my industry, and I'm going to sail off into the sunset. But, you know, those the appetite for certain businesses or certain industries ebbs and flows. And, you know, I think we're in the process of seeing some fairly major shifts in terms of private equity's appetite for smaller, closely held business. Most certainly can't be counted on, right? So getting back to the family-run entity, when it comes to like real, true financial planning, right, and having that discipline, what do you see is missing? What's when you look at somebody your size, somebody up, what do you see? Where's the missing part?
I'll tell you where the missing part is. It's in simplicity. You know, Wall Street loves complexity. Here's the truth. Simplicity is for winners. Complexity is for victims. Wall Street wants you to be a victim. They want to explain to you how complex this is, and you need their strategic, well, you know, earned advice that they can guide you and get it. By the way, they're going to get a percent of your, you know, of your portfolio. And it sounds like a small percentage until the compounding effect, you know, you play that out, and it's ridiculous. And when I said to myself, I don't have time to do that anymore. I have a business to run. I can't be watching Wall Street and watching the market and making shifts all the time. I need a set it and forget it approach so I can give my full attention to my business and building that and not have to worry that. And I'd just like to show you what I came about because I'm going to give it to all your listeners for free. So I'm not pitching anything here. Okay. This is the deal. It's my one page wealth compass. It took me from 63, nearly broke, to 69. A millionaire and now a multimillionaire because I two years later I doubled it again. But basically, it has a nine trail markers. And what you, I don't care if you're in a B2B family business or whatever your situation is. What's the nice thing about this is this: you pick where you're at, what step you're at, and it takes you from where you're at to financial freedom. And the other side is the five North Star principles, and these keep you safe. For example, this is the first one: live on less than you earn. Those basketball and football players, they never got this one. Okay, they never got this one with their tens of millions of dollars. That's why if you don't get this first principle, you can forget everything else. Okay, forget everything else. And what I do then, I have an executive meeting with myself once a week. It's on my calendar, 4 o'clock on Fridays. And I sit down and I find out where I'm at, where am I going next? Okay, and am I getting into trouble anywhere with my North Star principles? And I remember I had a meeting a while back with myself, and I realized I made an impulse purchase the week before. And then I looked at my compass. And I said, "Oh, geez, I was supposed to wait 24 hours before I made my impulse purchase," and that stopped me. Though, I lost $100 or whatever it cost the impulse purchase, but it stopped me from doing it again. What this 2 minute meeting does that, and we're all business. We're all busy. Family run business, you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off sometimes, just going crazy, busy. But everybody has 2 minutes. Everybody has 2 minutes in their week they can carve out. Okay, and if you can carve out 2 minutes. You can, this plan can work because it's incredibly simple. It's not complicated like Wall Street is. And like I said, it worked dramatically for me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. When it comes to, so there's different perspectives on debt. So when you're running a business, you know, certainly carrying some debt or some exposure, you know, maybe a necessity, you know, some would put it in the category of, you know, controlled risk, if you will, or conservative risk, if you will, which, you know, sometimes it is, you know, if you are entrepreneurial and have a business that's looking to grow and scale, sometimes you have to either take on some debt or take on some risk to drive that organization forward. So in your philosophy, in your framework, how and where does that fit in? Or at least what's your philosophy on, you know, is there such a thing as good debt or healthy debt versus unhealthy debt?
Yeah, I can only speak from personal experience, Ed. When I was in my 40s, I started my own business, okay? And I failed miserably at it. And it plunged me into serious six-figure debt. It took me years to pay off. I started a second business, failed at that too, so in my 40s. So I figured, okay, I'm not an entrepreneur. Some people are, some people aren't. I guess I'm not one of those. Until I was forced to be an entrepreneur in my 60s, okay? But I learned a lot from, here's why I was able to succeed at 63 when I wasn't able to succeed in 43. Because I learned a lot of hard-earned lessons in my 40s that I said to myself in my 60s, I am not going to repeat those. I'm not going to repeat those mistakes I made because that plunged me into such deep, deep debt. It took me years. And that really helped me a lot. And I'll be honest, I know I'm going to get a pushback from some of your listeners. Okay, one of them was debt. I do not go into debt. Other than my mortgage on my house, okay, which is paid off now, but I'm saying I'm totally comfortable with that. And I suppose if you were buying a real asset, like a real estate, like, okay, we're going to go in debt because our business needs a building and that kind of thing and equipment. Okay, that's a different thing too. But to do it for like working capital or to go into credit card debt and all that kind of thing, I'm just personally says, you know, you gotta figure out a better way than that because, you know, things get, and when it's your money, here's another thing I found, Ed. When it's my own money, man, I spend it a lot differently than if it's the bank's money. It's just, it's a psychological thing. I mean, I had to earn every penny of this money and I'm not going to waste a penny of it. Okay. Whereas when it's the bank's money, I'm not saying you're reckless. I'm not saying you're, oh no, I'm very frugal with bank's money too. Yeah. But psychologically, it's just different for me anyways. Now, I can't speak for everybody. That's my personal opinion here. And yeah. I know there are some businesses that do need debt and I'm not saying they don't.
Yeah. And I think personal debt's a little bit different and yeah, certainly, banks are quick to give it, but boy, they definitely want a healthy ransom to collect on it if it's not paid back in a timely way. You know,
exactly.
You know, I've seen certainly, and sometimes young people that don't have the right financial acumen sometimes spiral into debt because of that, because the interest keeps compounding and compounding. And then it's like a runaway train. They just can't stop it, you know, and then they're in trouble. You know, you've built this great framework. You've kept it simple, which I think is brilliant, because I think sometimes the most brilliant ideas are delivered with elegant simplicity. And I think you've struck on that. So in sizing up, especially the family governed business owner, what are some moves that you often see they should make or could make right away to change long-term outcomes? Like, what are some things you often look for or see right out of the gate to say, hey, if you just change this, you'd materially change your long-term outcome?
Well, yeah, let me tell you one thing I see is, I have a thing I wrote in my book. It's called FIGNA, Financial Independence, Graduate to the Next Adventure. You know, I don't know if you've heard of the FIRE movement, but financial independence, retire early, is pretty popular out there. Mm-hmm. But this is, but retiring just, I don't know, it seems weird to me. Financial independence, graduate to the next adventure seems more exciting. And what I've adopted that philosophy in my whole life. I'm not retired. I don't think I'll ever retire. I'm 72. You know, I'm supposed to be retired and sitting back, and we have a beautiful golf course in the backyard. And I see the golfers. I hope you're having fun back there. I just really, I don't, that's not me. That's okay. I'm not against it. But my point is this, even when you're on your way to financial freedom, you haven't achieved it yet. You still need to keep graduating to the next adventure, strategic adventures that are going to make you work. I've seen too many people in the family business get complacent. You know, it's a family business. I got my little role here. I'm comfortable with my little role. I want to make sure, you know, that I don't, you know, whatever. And they're not graduating to any new adventure. And I don't mean like, oh, just for the thrill. No, I'm talking about to grow the business, you know, to take strategic, well thought through risks. I don't mean like crazy risks. I'm talking about, you know, and look for different opportunities. They just felt like, okay, I do my job and it's a family business and whatever, that's the case. And that's just wrong. And that's what I was my last 8 years with my company. I knew I should have quit. But the thing is, I was comfortable. I wasn't graduating to the next adventure. I stopped doing that. And so I don't care if you've already reached financial independence or you're on the path to try to reach it, you need to be graduating to the next adventure in your career or it gets stagnant. And I don't believe there's anything as stagnant. I think you're either going forward or you're going backwards. I don't think there's any standing still in business. I really don't. That's my opinion.
So as we're talking, you know, when you're I'm a second generation, and from a previous generation, you get both the good and the bad, and sometimes you don't realize it.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
One of the things that I think that I was imparted to my dad and was very good was financial literacy. And now his financial advisor didn't like it at the time, but he said, here's my financial advisor. And I was like 22 years old. He goes, call him anytime. You can ask him whatever you want. So I took him up on that. And this poor guy, you know, was probably busy dealing with big clients. And he's talking to this 22-year-old kid who's got, you know, barely nothing to speak of in a portfolio, but he took the time, you know? Yeah, and, you know, some things that I learned is that early on is that some debt is okay, but typically not okay, and better not to have debt than to have debt. Yeah. Just really understanding the markets, being in tuned to where the general markets were moving. Again, you're right. People don't have the time and bandwidth to go into that deep dive. I mean, some people do, but by and large, most don't. But really just looking at, you know, financials, looking at P&Ls at a very young age, looking at balance sheets at a young age, and understanding that. At what, you know, and I think a lot of times when you were talking about some of these young athletes who come out and, you know, they've made massive money, you know, in their career, but they end up broke or near broke. Where, you know, if you had your way, where should financial literacy start? At what age should, you know, parents, you know, especially those in family businesses, start to open up the books to their kids, talk to their kids about the financials and you know, the wealth building in the family business?
Well, obviously it depends on the kid. I mean, some kids, teenagers, they could start learning it, and other kids in their 40s still, I don't know if they have a clue or want to have a clue. I don't know. But I do think the earlier the better. And I don't think I've heard a lot of states going to making financial literacy classes in high school a mandatory thing. And I think that's wonderful. I really do. I think that's critical to start that early, because I think, you know, according to the National Council on Aging, 80% of seniors face financial insecurity or experiencing financial insecurity. I didn't say, I didn't say 20% or 50%. I said 80%. That's most of our society is financially insecure in their senior years when they should really be enjoying life, but they're worried about running out of money or whatever. And so I think starting in high school, here's why I say high school too, because college debt is a real thing. I mean, it's serious. It's a burden that some people have for life. I've read articles where people in their 70s and 80s still have college debt. And now Social Security is being deducted from their Social Security now. And so now they're even in a worse situation. And they never graduated from college. They didn't even graduate. It's like buying a car, never getting a car, you know. But you have to pay. Here's the books to pay the payments on it, you know. For like, so that's where I think financial literacy is critical, because it's too, you can't start too early. I don't think early on.
Absolutely. I've certainly seen some families driven to the brink of bankruptcy on, you know. And it's, you're right, it's staggering. This is college debt, but you're in your 40s. What?
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't you do that like a decade plus ago?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. It's amazing, but very real. And that's a staggering statistic. So in the spirit of family business, let's talk about your business and we'll talk about your son for a minute.
Sure.
You brought him into the business in kind of a bit of a non-traditional way, but talk about that for a moment. How did that, talk about that evolution of your son coming in to work with you.
Sure. Well, my business was running really strong at that point. But my son, he's a good guy. He's just such a good person. And he was struggling with his career and just not being able to find what was right for him and all that kind of thing. In a traditional job, it just didn't work for him. And I remember, as a father, you know, your heart goes out, you want to do something for him, but I didn't know what to do. I mean, he was in a different industry than I was. And I just tried to give him encouraging words, but it really wasn't working. And when I remember praying about it, I says, you know, please help me understand how to help my son. And I got the answer in my mind. It came to me. It says, autism. He's autistic. Now, he's high functioning autistic. You wouldn't know it talking to him. You think he's just regular, but. And I remember telling my wife, I says, honey, I just had a prayer and I got the answer. I know what's wrong with our son. He's autistic. She goes, well, I'm glad you're finally catching up. I knew that 20 years ago when we gave him the tests at the school. But I didn't want to admit it. You know how you're going to some denial about things. Oh, no, my son's perfect. You know, that's not really true. You know, and so anyways, I thought about that. And I says, no, I got to do something. So then I had another prayer. What do I do about it? I know he's autistic now. And so I, but by the way, a lot of people like, Elon Musk is autistic. Henry Ford is autistic. It's not, they are terrible in a regular work environment as employees, but they can really be brilliant people, you know, that kind of thing. So I said, I'm going to hire you if you'd like the job to be my driver. When I go see clients, they need someone to drive me. He goes, I loved it, Dad. I just loved it. So he did it for about 6 months. He says, Dad, I'm getting bored with this. Can I go in with you and see the clients? So I says, yeah. So I took him in with my good clients that I knew for a long time, and they were, you know, I knew they'd be fine. And he did good. As a matter of fact, he'd make comments sometimes because he heard me with other clients, and I'm like shocked with what's coming out of his mouth, you know. And so then I took him with all my clients, and he was going with all my clients. Then occasionally I had him go see a prospect by himself or a client by himself, and he did fine. And when he drove me, he took his analytical skills, which he's very good at, and gave us a route that was the most efficient and had the city on a grid. So we would go into certain sections and not waste time. I get more productivity. I mean, his talents are different than my talents, but his talents were amazing. Last year, we had the best year in our history in our company by a big margin. And I attribute a lot of that to Adam's help. I mean, he's been amazing. So it's been more than a family business, Ed. It's been like a family salvation or a family helping somebody way beyond the money situation, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, I appreciate you sharing that. I think, there's been so much more, awareness around autism, and I too have a family with several people that are on the spectrum, and, having more awareness means A, you can be more understanding of their condition, but B, more appreciative of their brilliance. And from what I've seen, they're all ridiculously brilliant individuals, you know, a various varying degrees of functionality, but all just brilliant. And it's almost astounding. So that you can now tap into that, is you know, both as the owner and as the father, is probably, that's got to be very rewarding to you every
Oh, it
day.
is. It
That's
is very much
awesome.
so. Yeah.
For other owners out there who have children that may not, you know, follow what we'll call the traditional path, what advice might you give them about doing what you did with your son? Like, what might be a good takeaway?
Well, first of all, I would say please encourage them to do what their passion is or what their desire is, and don't force them into family business at all, because I've seen situations like that, and it's really it's the child is trying to please the parent, and the parent wants to help the kid, but they're both, it's just not a good situation. And just, you know, it's better to let them do their thing. But then there are a lot of situations where it is a perfect match. It's just, you know, it's in their blood, and that's a good thing. And that's, I've seen situations like that. And I've seen second generations flourish. I mean, really flourish. And so I guess you got to look at each child as a really, I know this sounds trite or common sense, but as a real individual and say, what are their strengths and talents are, what gets them excited in the morning or during the day, that kind of thing. And just encourage them to do the work. Because I mean, I've seen some people literally seem like they were prisoners in their family business, literally. And then other people like my son and other people, it freed them. They blossom. But you, boy, but if you don't get that combination right, boy, it can go from negative to really quickly negative.
It's a hard one
Yeah, it is.
to answer. You know, I even think about, I have twins. They're 21, they're in college.
Yeah.
I know my son will likely take a different path, and his focus is more on the sciences, medical sciences. And my daughter seems to have a desire to engage in law, but she also has the acumen to take Dalia Associates to Generation 3 if she wanted
Okay.
to. But the key point is if she wanted to. And it's got to be right for her, right time, right place, right reasons, or else probably shouldn't do it. But it's hard, you know, to say, you know, hey, wouldn't it be great to see this endure? But then again, you have to think about the individual and what's right for her. And certainly if the passion isn't there and the desire isn't there, it's not going to work anyway. So,
No, that's
you
right.
know.
I don't see a lot of them. I mean, there are some. There's cases where we're in the fifth or sixth generation, but I don't see many of them going past one or two generations. It just seems, I mean, as a group, okay. But yeah, there's always exceptions that go on for many generations, but most of them. And I think that's because just people are different. I mean, every generation is going to be the same. I don't
Well, it's I mean, and we've certainly, obviously, the I'd say if I had to look at the number of guests on our show, I'm sure the lion's share are Gen 2, but
know.
we most certainly have had 3, 4, 5. We've even had a seventh.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, those start to get fewer, you know, as time goes on. And for no shortcomings of the family, it's just, you know, people have different interests and different passions, you know, that may not align with what the family business is up to. And, you know, I think the message is always, that's okay. You know, if it's not right for you, don't do it. Don't do it out of, you know, certainly in some cultures, a lot of times you see it done out of duty and obligation. But that
Oh
never
yeah.
works well either, you know,
No, it doesn't.
because you end up with a you know a very resentful middle-aged person
Yeah.
who, you know, is sitting there thinking about all the things they should have, could have, would have done, you know,
I know.
otherwise. And
That's
that's not a
tragic.
good life, you know.
No.
So through your own journey, through bringing your son into the business and successfully doing so, having a, you know, a banner year on the heels of that, has or to what extent has your thoughts around legacy shifted or changed?
I don't know. You know, I don't know if my son will take over the business. He might. I really don't know, and he might not. And you know, I don't care either way. I don't really care either way. I just want him to be happy and fulfilled and all that kind of thing. I don't. I hate to say this, and this is probably a bad thing to say on your show because of, but legacy, I don't think that's as nearly as important as people are making out to be. I think much more important legacy is fulfillment and just finding who you are and making the most of that life that you've been blessed with, that God's given you. And so, you know, and if that's the family business, then great. And I've seen, you know, we've talked about it. We've seen pieces like that, but I've seen other cases where people are in their, like you say, in their 50s and 60s in the family business, and you can tell by their face and by the way they walk and by the way they talk, they're prisoners, and they did it for maybe legacy reasons or traditional reasons or whatever the reasons were, but it wasn't the right reason. And it's sad. It's a whole life gone like that. It's a sad. So I don't know.
Although when it's right, it's right, you know.
It
And
is. It is right.
And then it's
can I tell you, my sister, she took over the family business that I told you I was part of for a while, and she thrived. I mean, it was just like she was made for that thing. She was in her DNA, you know. But my other brothers and sisters, okay, not so much, you know, not as much, you know. So it's just so it's an individual thing.
So I had a guest on who was in their particular family, and this is not uncommon. Certain family businesses will stipulate that, all right, if you want to come into the family business, you have to first go work somewhere else for a period of years. And this one young fellow said, well, I understood that that was the policy, but I approached my dad anyway and said, listen, this is my passion. This is what I want. And I want it so bad, I don't want to wait. So, because he's like, if you know what you love, and you know that the family business happens to align with what you love, why on earth would you want to wait a day to start embarking on that journey? And I thought that was a really neat perspective for a young person to have, you know, to say, hey, I knew it in my heart. I wanted it all along. I don't want to wait. I don't want to go work somewhere else. I want to work right here. And I want to, you know, start right away. And, you know, that was very, you know, that was very refreshing to hear that. Not everybody has that. I certainly didn't have the clarity. I didn't think I was going to take this business to G2. You know, in my younger years, there was a period where I really thought I was meant for a different path, but here we are. So let me ask you this. If, you know, if you get this right, and it sounds like you're getting it right right now, but for the next 10 years, what will success look like for you, David, for you and your family? If we look 10 years out, what will that look like?
For me, it is what I said at Figna earlier. If I continue to graduate to the next adventure, I'll feel fulfilled. When I was 63, I was forced to graduate to a new adventure. No, I went kicking and screaming, but it worked out. It was such a blessing. And now at 72, I just launched this book. Okay, that's a new adventure, you know. And I'm thrilled with it. I'm having so much fun talking to you on something like this is great. And then, so you could, and then who knows what I'm gonna do at 82, you know? You have to have me back, and we'll have to put on calendars 10 years, have David back at 82 so he can talk about his new adventure. Okay. But I think it's what fulfillment and what happiness and what success means to me is continuing to graduate to new adventures that challenge you, that push you, that force you to grow in a positive, healthy way. That's what it is. It's not so much the money. Yeah, the money will be there if you're doing that the right way. And so I'm not worried about that so much. But it's that. And I tell you, I could stop working. I could have stopped working several years ago. I mean, definitely financially independent, but I don't want, I'm having too much fun. I really am.
I can tell by the enthusiasm and the way you embrace it, and your perspective and approach is so very refreshing, and you know, many, many important lessons and takeaways for all on this episode already. Last question though. If any of our listeners wanted to connect with you to learn more about you and more about Wealth Compass or to check out your book, what's the best way for them to learn more?
Absolutely. Go to onepagewealthcompass.com/free. And I'll tell you why I say slash free. Because there you can download the One Page Wealth Compass for free. And I don't care what your financial situation is. This is a great tool to just look at, hey, where I'm at, where I want to go, how far am I away from financial independence? And if I'm not even on the path, it's time to get on the path, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm not here to pitch anything to try to sell you. I'm giving it for free because I was in a dark place and it was terrible. And I was living, I had a lifeline in the form of inspiration for this compass. And I felt like the ultimate selfishness is not to share it. So just go to onepagewealthcompass.com/free, download it for yourself, check it out. And if you like it, you can get the book. It's called One Page Wealth Compass. It's the same thing. And this gives you more of the details. This is the 30,000 foot view of the compass. And this is the turn right at the stop sign, take a left at the intersection, that kind of thing. If you want more details about, okay, how do I do it? But it's written in a very simple form. It's a storybook form. It's not a boring financial book, I promise you. So onepagewealthcompass.com/free, that's where I suggest going.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll be sure to include that in the show notes as well. And thank you for that. That was very kind of you, David. Sure. So to wrap up, what stands out in David's story is that disruption doesn't just create risk. It creates sometimes visibility and opportunity, visibility into where we're exposed, what we've been assuming, and what we actually need to do to change. So for a lot of business owners, the wake-up call never comes until it's too late. David's experience and what he's built since offers a different path. David, thank you for sharing your story and your perspective and for doing so with such candor and grace. I really appreciate it. Again, we've been speaking with David Nassif of Wealth Compass, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ed. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.